If you are thinking about starting a podcast, either by yourself, with a co-host, with guests, maybe it's audio only, or with video, please keep on listening. I started podcasting in early 2019, and for the rare occasions that I had on a guest, it was always in person. But once the pandemic came around and everything became remote, using Zencastr really, really opened up my possibilities of who I could have on a guest. I wasn't limited to the people who I could get in person anymore. I have recorded guests using Zencastr everywhere from just a handful of miles away from where I am in the Chicago area, all the way to the other side of the world in New Zealand. So the video and the audio quality are great, especially if they have a decent camera and microphone. And getting the files couldn't be easier. I really, really love that Zencastr records the audio and the video to the person's local computer, so the quality isn't lowered when you get things like internet hiccups. It then uploads the footage to the platform during the recording, and when you hit stop, it quickly finishes the upload and then processes the files so you can directly download them right from the platform. The files are even accessible if something goes wrong. And this next part, I'm going to basically read verbatim because I couldn't have said it better myself. It's super easy to record a podcast with Zencastr. Log in using your browser and start recording a high-quality podcast right away. Record studio-quality sound and up to 4K video with your guests. Feel a sense of zen knowing Zencastr's multi-layered backups ensure you always have your recordings in the highest quality, even if the connection is unstable. Have you ever worried what you sound like? Zencastr's post-production process makes you sound buttery smooth. It automatically removes those ums and ahs in your recording. It removes those awkward pauses in conversation, too. Set the right podcast loudness and levels while reducing background noise with a click of a button. If you have thought about podcasting before and realized that you need lots of different tools and services, those days are over. With Zencastr's all-in-one podcast platform, you can create your podcast all in one place and distribute to Spotify, Apple, and other major destinations. So, go to zencastr.com/pricing and use my code WORDNERD, WORDNERD, all one word, and you'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. I want you to have the same easy experience as I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. Hello, word nerds. Welcome to the dictionary. My name is Spencer, and this is my show, a podcast also on the YouTube, and I hope you're enjoying it. Please come back again every single day. Woo-woo! Let's see. I'm recording this March 9th at 1 p.m., getting a couple recordings in today on the weekend because it's been a busy week, and I haven't been able to record as much as I would like to, so we're doing some extra stuff. I hope you enjoyed the previous episode with Helen Zaltzman. If you haven't heard it, go back. You gotta do this in order. That's the only way that you can do this. All right, let's talk about the words in this episode. The first word is eucalyptus. E-U-C-A-L-Y-P-T-U-S. Noun from 1801. Eucalyptus, the plural is eucalypti, or eucalypti, or eucalyptuses, with an ES at the end. This is any of a genus of mostly Australian evergreen trees or rarely shrubs of the myrtle family that have rigid entire leaves and umbellate flowers and are widely cultivated for their gums, resins, oils, and woods. You can use eucalyptus for so many things. Wood, you could just take the wood from the eucalyptus tree or shrub. The oils, the resins, the gums, you can use it for all sorts of things and stuff and flavorings and smells. Let's see, the genus name is eucalyptus, and I don't know what entire leaves. They're rigid entire leaves. Well, they're not partial leaves, they're whole leaves. They have umbellate flowers, not sure what that means. And I mean, I'm pretty sure that we all know. Is it the koalas? They're eating the eucalyptus. They're just eating all day long. I think they're same with like panda bears. Pandas are eating the bamboo, but the koalas are eating the eucalyptus. And I think their metabolism is so slow that they're just eating like all day long. If they're not eating, they're sleeping. If they're not sleeping, they're eating. And isn't there something about eucalyptus that has like, is it poisonous or something? But they're like, nah, it's not poisonous to me. I can handle it. I could have that wrong. The etymology for eucalyptus. This is from the U-E-U prefix, which we had in the previous episode. That was well, easily, good, true, all that stuff. And then plus the Greek word kalyptos with a K, which means covered. And that is from kalyptein, which means to conceal. That is from the conical covering of the buds. And guess what? There's more at the word hell. Yeah. All right. So now we got to look at eucalyptus. Eucalyptus, and it's the conical covering of the bud. Where are we going to... Let's look up the conical, or maybe we should just look up bud covering. Bud covering. I want to see... So basically, it seems like they are... I see. They look very pointy and thorny when the leaves, I guess, or the bud, the flower, is before it has bloomed. It's in this... I don't want to say shell, but maybe a shell. It's in this thing. Yeah, maybe I'll post a picture of this on the social media. It's got a point to it. It's sort of bulbous on the bottom, and then it comes to a point. So it's covered. It's concealed. Why hell? I don't know. They're very pointy and scary, and that's why they said that's where the hell came from? I don't know. And why Greek? Why wouldn't this be like an aboriginal word or something like that? I don't understand why Greek had to get into this one. Or why English didn't take an aboriginal word. That seems more respectful. Anything else about this? Yeah, I don't know. Don't go eating the eucalyptus leaves. I don't think that's probably something humans should do. Nah. Okay, sound effect time. The next word is eukaryote, eucaryote, which is a variation of eukaryote with a K instead of a C, which is going to be in the next episode. The next word is Eucharist, capital E, and then the rest of the letters. Noun from the 14th century. Number one, the synonym is the 2A definition for the word communion. So if you are in that religious world, you know what this is. You take the Eucharist, you eat the cracker, you drink the wine, and then you have a little party. Number two, this is in the Christian Science world specifically, and it is spiritual communion with God. So when you are having a communion with God in a spiritual way, whatever that is for you in Christian Science, that would be the Eucharist. Eucharistic is an adjective often capitalized. This is from Greek, I guess, Lower Latin, Eucharistia from Greek. It means Eucharist or gratitude, from Eucharistos, which means grateful. I am so grateful that I get to eat this cardboard cracker. From the U prefix plus kerizine, no, plus kerizisthai, which means to show favor. That means you're being grateful, you're showing favor. From charis with a ch, which means favor or grace or gratitude, akin to the Greek word charine, which means to rejoice. And there's more at the word yearn. I yearn for a very thin, unflavored cracker. Okay, that's it for that word. The next word is euchre. E-U-C-H-R-E, first form, noun from 1841. This is a card game in which each player is dealt five cards, and the player making trump must take three tricks to win a hand. And unfortunately, the dictionary does not have enough space to fully teach you how to play the game euchre. I do remember learning this when I was in high school. Some friends of mine knew it, and we played a little bit. I don't remember how to play. I like a good old card game, just like the next person, so maybe someday I'll relearn euchre. I think this is definitely feels like a big game in the Midwest. I don't know. I've heard a lot of Midwest people playing euchre. I don't know if it's big anywhere else. You might be asking me out loud, hey, Spencer, where is this name from? Why is it called euchre? And unfortunately, I cannot tell you that because it says origin unknown. But maybe I'll put a link in the show notes for the game euchre. If you want to learn how to play, follow the directions and then you can learn how to play. And then maybe it'll also say something about where this name possibly came from. Who knows? Maybe somebody knows. It's probably some gibberish word that somebody made up in 1841. They're like, here, we made up this card game. What should we call it? Oh, well, maybe. I'm looking ahead. Maybe it's part of the next word. We'll see. But that doesn't have etymology either. Oh, it's so confusing. The next word is euchre again. This is the second form. This is the verb. Looks like it's transitive verb from 1847. Now, okay, this is interesting because that's 6 years after the card game. So I guess this might be named after the card game, literally named after the card game. Number one, to prevent from winning three tricks in euchre. Okay, I mean, it's right there. Like, oh, you euchred me when we were playing the game euchre. You prevented me from winning three tricks. I've been euchred. Number two, the synonyms are cheat and trick, as in euchred out of their life savings. And that is a quote from Pete Martin. So, yeah, I mean, it just seems like this verb came from the game. But then where did the name for the game come from? I don't know. Maybe it was somebody's name. Next is euchromatin. Euchromatin. You're being so chromaty. Noun from 1932. The part of chromatin that is genetically active and is largely composed of genes. And you're going to have to go back a ways to hear me talk about chromatin. And maybe you just want to go look it up. It's the part of the chromatin called the euchromatin. It's active genetically, and it's mostly filled with genes. Euchromatic. Euchromatic is an adjective. Boo-wee-whoop. The next word is euclase or euclase. Noun from 1804. A mineral that consists of a brittle silicate of beryllium and aluminum in pale yellow. Now, this is worded kind of weird. A mineral that consists of a brittle silicate of beryllium and aluminum in pale yellow, green, or blue prismatic crystals, and is used especially as a gemstone. So maybe I gotta post a picture of this euclase on social media so we can see what it looks like. Maybe I'll just do a quick little looky-loo right now to see what it looks like. Oh, yeah. Oh, it's so pretty. These examples are blue. It's very, very nice looking. Okay, the name is from the Greek klassis, the U prefix plus klassis, which means breaking. Also from clan, which means to break. And that's interesting. Why is it about breaking? It's probably hard to break this crystal. Maybe it's not hard. I don't know. It's a colorless white, pale green to deep yellowish green, greenish blue, pale blue to deep blue, light red. It can be so many different colors. Maybe it looks like it's broken. In this example that I'm seeing, there's a lot of vertical lines, so maybe it looks like it's been cracked or something, and that's why they're like, hey, it's been broken. Let's call it euclase. Yeah, that's that one. Booyah, wah-wah. The sound effect is changing so much. The next word is Euclidean. 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 Or you can replace it, the N can be I-A-N. Perfectly fine. That word, this word, is an adjective often capitalized from 1660, and it is of relating to or based on the geometry of Euclid or a geometry with similar axioms. So Euclid, I believe, was somebody in ancient Greece who was doing geometry, doing math, doing all those fun things with the shapes and the angles and the lines and the points and the whatever else is in geometry. And maybe there were some axioms as part of that math that Euclid made up. And so anything related to that, based on that geometry by Euclid, is Euclidean. There's no other information, but I feel like I should put a link in the show notes for Euclidean. Don't you think? If you want to go learn about Euclidean geometry, it's everybody's favorite. Well, I'm sort of skipping ahead. Hold up. We've got Euclidean algorithm. And if you are watching this on YouTube, you will have seen a whole change in the visuals. This is a new day. I got pulled away when I was recording this before. Okay, let's finish up this episode. Euclidean algorithm. Euclidean has a capital E. This is a noun from circa 1955. It is a method of finding the greatest common divisor of two numbers by dividing the larger by the smaller by the remainder, the first remainder by the second remainder, wow, this is complicated, and so on until exact division is obtained, whence the greatest common divisor is the exact divisor. Ooh, my brain just went, hello, what's up? This is also called Euclid's algorithm. It's the algorithm of Euclid. Euclid made it up. And so you can also use the adjective Euclidean. Let's go back, because of course this has been, I don't know, 4 or 5 days since I recorded the first part. Euclidean is of relating to based on the geometry of Euclid. Yeah, anything about Euclid. So I kind of want to see a visual. Like, I don't feel like this is necessarily a visual thing, but maybe there's like a, it just shows all the different steps. Here we go. We got some images. We got some images, people. Here we go. Okay, perfect. An example. 78 divided by 66 equals 1 with a remainder of 12. And then you take 66 and divide that by 12, and you get 5 with a remainder of 6. And then you take 12, so it's the, you know, the second number of what's being, it's the divisor, I think that's what they used here. Method of the greatest common divisor of two numbers by dividing the larger to the larger, the smaller by the remainder, and then the first remainder by the second remainder. Oh my God, so 66 divided by 12 is 5, remainder of 6, then you take the 12, which was the first remainder, divided by 6, which is the second remainder, and you get 2 with a remainder of 0. So then 6 is the greatest common factor in that situation. I still don't totally understand, like, what are we using this for? What's the point of this? Why? What's going on with this? But it sounds interesting, and I'm sure there's some very good uses. I know. Let's look up. Let's just add why to this search. Why Euclidean algorithm? If two numbers have no common prime factors, their GCD, greatest common divisor, is 1. Obtained here is an instance of the empty product. In other words, they are coprime. A key advantage of the Euclidean algorithm is that it can find the GCD efficiently without having to compute the prime factors. And if you need the GCD, then you do some Euclidean algorithming. Okay, that's it for that one. I'm not in the math world, so I don't use it. Let's go on to the next word. Wee-oo. We have Euclidean geometry. Oh, based on all this Euclidean stuff, it sounds like it's going to be interesting. The E is often capitalized. Noun from circa 1865. Number one, geometry based on Euclid's axioms. And you just got to go learn up about axioms. Learn up about those. Number two, the geometry of a Euclidean space. What's a Euclidean space? Well, that's the next word. Wee-oo. Euclidean space, the E is often capitalized. Noun from 1883. A space in which Euclid's axioms and definitions apply. There's a whole big old parentheses section. A space in which Euclid's axioms and definitions apply. And what are examples of these definitions? You may be asking. Examples would be straight and parallel lines and angles of plane triangles. Plane triangles. Oh boy, I wish I knew more about this Euclidean stuff. Let's just look up Euclidean space. Is there a visual of this one that will help us? There's some pictures. It's this 3D space and there's a box, and I don't really know what. I'm sure Euclidean stuff is not as complicated as I make it seem. It's a two- or three-dimensional space in which the axioms and postulates of Euclidean geometry apply. But what are axioms and postulates? Also, a space in any finite number of dimensions in which points are designated by coordinates. Oh, is that just the normal? Is that what it is? X, Y? You got to go two on the X and three on the Y? Or in three dimensions, it would be 2, 3, 4? Boop, 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 boop. And the distance between points is given. Yeah. Probably a lot of things are called Euclidean, just normal stuff that we do, and I just didn't realize it. The next word is Eucrite. Eucrite. Noun from 1881, number one, is a stony meteorite composed essentially of plagioclase and pigeonite. Pigeonite. It's a stony meteorite. It's a meteorite, and it's called Eucrite. Number two, a rock consisting of a very basic gabbro. And gabbro is G-A-B-B-R-O. Gabbro. That's a bro who can't stop talking. A rock consisting of a very basic gabbro. I have no clue what a gabbro is. You gotta wait a few years until the G's. Eucritic is an adjective. This word, Eucrite, is from the Greek Eucritos or Eucritos, which means easily discerned. So I guess these meteorites or these rocks were very easily figure-outable based on what they're made of. That is from the EU prefix plus kritos or kritos, which means separated, from crinine, which means to separate, and there's more at the word certain. So yeah, Eucrite. Not entirely sure how easily discerned and separated, sort of became this rock or this meteorite. But that's how words go. Wee-you. Next is, ooh, I believe this is our last word. Yes, it is. Here we go. Eudaemonism. 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 And you can also spell it Eudai for some reason. And you would pronounce that one eudaemonism. This is a noun from 1827. It is a theory that the highest ethical goal is happiness and personal well-being. I was thinking that we might be talking about demons, but we're not. But I do believe that it is sort of in the etymology. The highest ethical goal is happiness and personal well-being. The most important goal that you can achieve in life, this is what this is saying, I think, is for yourself to be happy and being well. Have your own well-being, personal well-being. Happiness, getting all the things that you want, having all the things that you need, more importantly. How do you have some personal well-being? I'm trying to figure out how to like reword that in another way. That's a theory, eudaemonism. Let's look at the etymology, because this is interesting. It is from the Greek eudaimia or eudaimia, which means happiness. Let's break that word down more. We got eudaimon or eudaimon, which means having a good attendant spirit, or also just happy. Having a good attendant spirit. So that's from the EU prefix plus demon or daimon, which means spirit. And of course, there is more at the word demon, D-E-M-O-N, because they're like a spirit, but they're a bad spirit. So then how do you, so does the EU, so if demon or daimon is spirit, what is the EU prefix doing? Well, easily good, good. That's one of the definitions of the prefix. So EU plus demon literally means good spirit. So if you have good spirit, you're I'm happy. That's what you say when you're happy. I'm happy. If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. Okay, eudaemonism. It makes so much more sense when you break it down, when you look at the etymology and you're like, oh, okay, it makes sense now. We're not talking about demons. It's just a word for spirit, good spirit. Well, what do I think about this? Highest ethical goal is happiness and personal well-being. Obviously, those things are very important. And I think having fun, enjoying life is probably all part of that personal well-being. I think those are incredibly important. You know, I mean, I could go into this deep, but I shouldn't go too far. You know, we're all gonna die. As Allie Ward likes to say on her podcast, Ologies, nothing matters, we're all gonna die, so text your crush and cut your bangs and et cetera, et cetera. And those are not necessarily the things that I would say. Maybe I should come up with my own thing, but it's all temporary. And in the grand scheme of things, it matters, but it also doesn't matter. And do what makes you happy. Be yourself. Be true to yourself. And is that the highest ethical goal? Ethical. That's the one. That's, I think, maybe the word that might be throwing me off. Ethical means like, well, if it's the highest ethical goal, maybe that means you should be helping others. That also, I believe, is one of, if not the highest ethical goal, is to, if you have the ability to help somebody else, do it. Why not do it? And the great thing about that is that it's going to bring you so much more happiness and personal well-being than you even realize. I mean, this, I think it's been proven time and time again that giving is better than receiving, which is why I'm giving you this amazing podcast. Makes me feel so good to give you this awesome podcast and YouTube show. Eudemonism. Fascinating word. Didn't know about that one. Because, of course, why isn't this a more common thing that people are talking about? Well, I got to pick a word of the episode. And half of these words were, recorded like 4 days ago. So let's see if I can remember what they are. Eucalyptus. Eukaryote. Eucharist. Euchre. Euchromatin. I think I need to do a little bit of a reading. Something about genes. Euclase. That's a mineral. Euclidean. That's with all the axioms and stuff, and I don't know what those are. Euclidean algorithm. Euclidean geometry. Euclidean space. Eucrite. And eudemonism. I'm going to take a quick look. I do, you know, eucalyptus, I'm sure they're great. I'm not a koala, so I don't really have the strongest of feelings towards eucalyptus. Maybe I should try some. Nah, that's probably not a good idea. Don't eat eucalyptus. Unless you're a koala. If you are somehow a koala and you're listening to this episode, first of all, I don't know the sounds that a koala makes. I was saying hello in koalaese. And then also, how are you listening to this podcast? How are you checking this out? Are your handlers at the Koala Sanctuary in Australia, did they put on this show for you? I hope you enjoy your eucalyptus lunch. I feel like I just need to pick eudemonism, because that sounds pretty great. Why we even have a word for this? It's just like, yeah, be happy. Be happy, and you know it. And be good to people. Be good to people. Help other people. Eudemonism. Eudemonism. It's when you've got the good spirit. Eudemonism. Hey. Okay. I am not going to tell you about a movie that I watched because we would get all out of order. Because I've already recorded the next episode because I forgot that I needed to re-record this one or finish recording it. And I think I also recorded the one after that. Yes, I did. So I would, it's all out of order, and we can't have movies out of order. Nobody wants out of order movies. That's just craziness. So I'm going to end this episode here. Until next time, this is Spencer Dispensing Information. Goodbye.